Welcome to this podcast by the Heinrich Böll Foundation. This is the first episode in the series called 50 Years of ASEAN, Still Waiting for Social and Ecological Justice. And this is your host, Johanna Son. The 50 years of existence that the Association of Southeast Asian Nations marks in 2017 is no small feat. This anniversary provides ASEAN citizens a chance to look back as well as to look forward. It also allows them to take stock of ASEAN's vision of development and where the environment is in this equation, 5 decades later. This episode looks deeper into these issues. Say ASEAN, and people usually think of high-level summits of presidents and prime ministers. Media reports often discuss the opportunities for business and for commerce offered by the deeper, faster, and more institutionalized economic integration that ASEAN has been pursuing. As ASEAN marks its 50th anniversary in 2017, public perceptions of it often hover around economics, business, investment, and capital, and some foreign policy and political issues. It is not usually seen as a development-focused group, although ASEAN has been working on transforming itself from an intergovernmental organization to a community. In ASEAN's own words, it aims to build a people-centered, people-oriented ASEAN. But are ecological and environmental concerns built into its template for regional integration, regional cooperation, and the formation of an ASEAN community? Where is the environment in ASEAN's development model at the mature age of 50? To look at the bigger picture, we spoke to Shalmali Gatal of the Focus on the Global South based in Bangkok, Thailand, and Yeb Sanyo of Greenpeace Southeast Asia in Manila, the Philippines. That the 10-nation ASEAN is seen as paying the most attention to economic integration is no surprise, explains Shalmali, who is Executive Director of Focus on the Global South.
The perception about ASEAN being more about business and investment and capital integration is because that's where ASEAN policies are most evident and ASEAN cooperation is most evident. So I don't think it's only a perception, I think it's a reality.
Yeb Sanyo agrees that economic integration is the main focus in the ASEAN Community Project. Launched in 2015, this is ASEAN's plan for greater integration in a region of more than 620 million people and consists of political, socio-cultural, and economic pillars.
It may not just be the economy that they're looking at, but the perception is very reasonable because the most of the conversation is almost about creating the single market, free flow of goods, fostering free trade, opening the borders, enhancing tourism. These are obviously biased towards the conversation on the economy. Competitiveness, these are things that we hear a lot in the language. And these are also evident in the key documents of the ASEAN, in particular the blueprints of the three communities.
Indeed, ASEAN has come a long way since its birth as an organization of anti-communist states in August 1967. Its past 5 decades have been a growth process for ASEAN itself, including in the environmental aspect.
We do see the individual governments of Southeast Asia becoming more proactive on environmental issues, especially at the national level. And that is the strength of a regional grouping like the ASEAN when individual governments start to look at not just transboundary issues, but also national environmental issues. So indeed, there has been a lot of progress, and one of the key issues that has been put to question even since the 1998 economic collapse of Southeast Asia. During that time was also the time when the haze issue was literally burning.
Right.
And it put to doubt whether Southeast Asia could remain a leader globally. And of course, now it's very clear we have the Southeast Asian Haze Agreement, which allows us to address the haze issue at the governmental level. And it is a very good, positive sign that ASEAN governments are treating this issue very seriously. On coastal and marine issues, ASEAN has made progress in terms of being able to agree on certain protocols governing marine pollution and also ensuring that Southeast Asia remains a viable source of fish and of marine produce. So this is something that we do see as positive gains for Southeast Asia and ASEAN. I think, in fairness to ASEAN, it is indeed making inroads into many of the key problems that pervade the region.
But on a major, current, and obvious environmental priority such as climate change, ASEAN has fallen short in shaping regional norms. This is despite the fact that member states like the Philippines, Indonesia, and Myanmar have borne the brunt of nasty ecological disasters due to climate change. Before he joined Greenpeace, Yeb Sanyo was climate negotiator for the Philippine government. ASEAN did not operate as a bloc in UN negotiations on climate change, including until the Paris Agreement was reached in 2015.
That leads us to ask, why can't the ASEAN be a force to reckon with in the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change? And the reasons are quite clear. The complexity of ASEAN being a very diverse region in terms of economy, so it really hampers that desire for ASEAN to agree fundamentally on important issues on climate. While we do have seen a lot of yearly declarations from ASEAN that support the general direction towards addressing climate change, it has, I think, the big elephant in the room, and I'm even hesitant to use that metaphor because of the cultural sensitivities in the region, but I'd say the big elephant in the room is why the ASEAN is not a formal negotiating bloc in the UN, when I believe on climate it should be, because it has a lot of commonalities as far as being vulnerable to climate impacts is concerned.
Perhaps ASEAN could not reach a consensus on climate change commitments due to the conflicting interests of member countries in different stages of development, or perhaps there was a hesitance to formalize such commitments. But the fact is, Sanyo believes, that the lack of a meaningful profile on climate change is a lost opportunity for ASEAN.
We of course acknowledge that in terms of the economy, it is quite diverse. And the interests really vary a lot in the ASEAN region. However, it behooves the ASEAN to unite on climate. This is one issue that I think could be a source of unity for the ASEAN, and continuously the ASEAN seems to be successful at avoiding in converging on climate change in the best possible way.
Shalmali sees ASEAN's behavior in climate change as being symptomatic of the larger challenge to its development path and its relevance.
In terms of environment, climate, the ecological risks of forging certain development paths is very clearly evident in the ASEAN region. But I don't see a commitment to sustainability, to environmental sustainability. I don't see a commitment to actually adapt to climate change and to reduce emissions. I don't see a commitment to change the kind of economic development model that is needed to actually effectively tackle environmental and climate issues. I don't see this kind of commitment being translated into policy and action in ASEAN, because the development model that ASEAN is moving forward with is a very high economic growth model driven by massive infrastructure investments by a lot of extractive industry.
This leads to a contradiction in ASEAN's actions when it comes to the environment, Shalmali says.
The environmental, social, and climate footprint of this model is huge. So I don't understand how, on one hand, governments can use this language of sustainability and protecting nature and doing biodiversity, etc., and at the same time, go on with business as usual.
On key issues like climate change and dynamism and ensuring that human rights as well is protected, there's still a tendency to equate gains, even in the aspect of environment, with that of first premising that on economic growth. And in many cases, it's an ideological debate that's been there raging for many decades on whether you want to pursue economic growth first before you protect the environment, or you can do it at the same time, and they're not mutually exclusive. I think ASEAN is kind of vague on this, and it seems like they are subscribing, or the ASEAN is subscribing to the notion that economic growth needs to happen before we address, or before we pay attention, at least in practice, to key environmental issues that plague the region.
The global debate in the 80s and onwards may have moved past this discussion on whether it should be development or environment. Since that time, sustainability has been locked into the definition of what makes for quality economic growth and development. Shouldn't this have been the norm for ASEAN as well?
Yes, but in ASEAN, it's not the norm. I mean, if you look at the ASEAN Economic Community Blueprint, it has three major agreements. There's the ASEAN Comprehensive Investment Agreement, the ASEAN Trade in Goods and Services, and then there's the ASEAN Framework on Services. So the three major agreements. There is no agreement in the ASEAN community, economic community, on climate change or environment or, you know, social, environmental, ecological issues.
ASEAN documents and statements do discuss the environment, but they often seem to be afterthoughts to the bigger goal of economic competitiveness, investments, and capital, she adds.
But if you look at the what's there on environment, they're sort of in little silos, you know? So you have there's nature and biodiversity, protecting nature and biodiversity. Yes, lofty goals, but what are they doing to protect nature and biodiversity? They will add things like, you know, biodiversity corridors, they'll support heritage parks, they'll put money into regeneration of species and so on. They have sustainable cities, technology, water management, coastal resources management. They even have a whole section on climate change. And usually under climate change, they'll talk about renewable energies and technologies and so on. But all this is going alongside these massive big-ticket projects that have huge climate footprints. So I don't see where environment has been integrated into the ASEAN vision of an economic community. And the economic communities, it's very much about competitiveness within ASEAN and the competitiveness of ASEAN in the global economy. And I don't think they're going to allow social and environmental considerations to in any way temper their competitiveness.
Some civil society advocates have pointed out the fact that there is no environmental pillar in the ASEAN community. It currently has three pillars: the political, sociocultural, and economic. Right now, environmental issues fall under the sociocultural community.
They would even insist that the ASEAN should have environment as a pillar and not just under the sociocultural community. It has to look at the environment as a pillar itself. After all, without all of the resources in the ASEAN, the natural resources of the ASEAN, the economy is nothing.
For Shalmali, ASEAN's approach to the environment comes after its shift over the decades from its more political and foreign policy roots into the arena of business and economics.
When we go back to look at how ASEAN was started, no? And the global political context of, you know, there being a socialist bloc and a non-socialist bloc. Yes, the intentions behind it were much more foreign policy oriented. But at least since the early 90s, when ASEAN has begun to expand, and definitely in this century, in the 21st century, in the last 17 years, I think ASEAN has moved much more into the realm of business and economic interests and integration through those ties. Whereas on foreign policy, for example, it still maintains the principle of non-interference.
The kind of integration that's been happening at the fastest pace is that of capital instead of social, cultural, and political in this very diverse region, she points out.
Another thing that's, I think, important in the context of ASEAN and also in the context of the whole world, perhaps, development has very much become investment. So, you know, there was a time when, in the 20th century, seems so long ago, right? There was a time when we thought of development as social development, human development, education, all those types. You know, it was a very holistic concept. But increasingly, development is about economic growth, which is to come through investment, and or free trade in investment and competitiveness. So I think it's very unfortunate that we've sort of gone back to a very narrow definition and approach of trickle-down economics.
The larger challenge lies in how ASEAN's development can be infused with more environmental values.
But the vision that ASEAN leaders seem to have is not of, you know, a livable environment or a potential, these rewards, you know, these environmental, ecological, natural wealth is not considered sufficient reward. Instead, competitiveness in the next 5 years is.
What would the mature ASEAN look like in terms of the environment? One that is able, for example, to temper the growth at all costs push and have the environment as a non-negotiable component of regional integration.
I think it should, and that's not an option for ASEAN. If it really wants to be seen as a progressive region in the world where it is on the way to fulfilling its dreams towards economic stability and also ensuring that it benefits people's daily lives, ASEAN needs to be able to have environment at the center.
Every day is not too late, because if you're going to try to do something to contribute constructively to integrating environmental concerns or environment as a basic, fundamental, non-negotiable, you have to set ecological limits on growth. You have to set environmental limits on growth. I mean, the nature has only so much carrying capacity. It can't go beyond that. So that if that isn't integrated into ASEAN's economic vision, I don't think any amount of heritage parks and saving orangutans and endangered species is really going to make, you know, ASEAN any kind of a leader in ecologically sustainable development.